Daniel chapter 7. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions of his head as he lay in bed. Then he wrote down the dream and told the sum of the matter. Daniel declared, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea, and four great beasts came up out of the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Then as I looked, its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And the mind of a man was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second one, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. It had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth, and it was told, 'Arise, devour much flesh.' After this, I looked, and behold, another, like a leopard, with 4 wings of a bird on its back. And the beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions. And behold, a 4th beast, terrifying and dreadful and exceedingly strong. It had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces, and stamped what was left with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another horn, a little one, before which 3 of the 1st horns were plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. As I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, and wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and came out from before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. I looked then because of the sound of the great words that the horn was speaking. And as I looked, the beast was killed and its body destroyed and given over to be burned with fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. I approached one of those who stood there and asked him the truth concerning all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of the things. These 4 great beasts are 4 kings who shall arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever, and ever. Then I desired to know the truth about the 4th beast, which was different from all the rest, exceedingly terrifying, with its teeth of iron and claws of bronze, and which devoured and broke in pieces and stamped what was left with its feet, and about the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn that came up, and before which 3 of them fell, the horn that had eyes and a mouth, that spoke great things, and that seemed greater than its companions. As I looked, this horn made war with the saints and prevailed over them, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given for the saints of the Most High, and the time came when the saints possessed the kingdom. Thus he said, "As for the 4th beast, there shall be a 4th kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, and trample it down, and break it to pieces. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings shall arise, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the former ones, and shall put down 3 kings. He shall speak words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and shall think to change the times and the law. and they shall be given into his hand for a time, times and half a time. But the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion shall be taken away, to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Here is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly alarmed me, and my color changed, but I kept the matter in my heart.
Well, hey, I am encouraged to see that there are people here this morning. That means that you were not completely weirded out by the introduction to this vision last week, and I sincerely hope you will be back again next week, but let's see how we go today as we carry on through this very strange vision given to Daniel in Daniel chapter 7, which is the first of four visions given to Daniel. And remember, Daniel is largely just an ordinary guy who was taken into exile in Babylon, a guy from the remaining tribe of Judah in Israel, taken as a teenager. He has lived all of his life, well, most of it, the last 70 years of his life, has been lived in Babylon, where he has been so faithful in serving and worshiping his God. And God's hand has been upon Daniel in extraordinary ways. He has given Daniel amazing influence over Babylon, where he has become a personal advisor to various kings in the empire. God has given Daniel extraordinary wisdom and insight to be able to interpret strange dreams given to other kings in the empire, not to mention the fact that God has miraculously rescued Daniel from the lion's den and his buddies from a flaming furnace. In other words, Daniel has seen a few things in his 70 years in Babylon. Now, near the end of his life, he's near the end of his days, God now starts to give Daniel himself visions. And these are visions that span the immediate future of God's people. So kind of visions that include the changing of the God from Babylon to Persia and Greece and Rome, etc. So visions that pertain to kind of near events happening, but also visions that would cross right over to far distant events that are so far in the future that are events even still in our future today. Now, when I say that, what I want you to note about that is what we believe and what you'll see clearly today, I hope, is that despite how strange this book is, and it is, it includes events, some of which have been fulfilled in stunning detail, but events here that still refer to things that are yet to take place. So for me, what that means is this book, despite how hard it is and how much work it is to unpack it, is living and alive for us today. What we are reading about and what we are studying are details about events that are still yet to take place. How exciting is that? And so that is my kind of just my charge to you, like, we can do this, guys, come on, because really it's going to be worthwhile to us to kind of wade through this literature, which is so different to us. We're just not used to studying these passages of the Bible because of how strange they are to us. So last week, we kind of started by looking at the first 14 verses, which was just the dream as Daniel recalls it. And we pick it up today in verse 15, after the vision had been given to him. And we read, "As for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me." No kidding, right? Daniel's anxious stature, what's really causing this alarm and what is disturbing Daniel is not so much the crazy imagery of beasts in a dream. This is something that Daniel is used to. He has interpreted dreams like this. The reason Daniel is so alarmed is because he senses that this dream has ominous implications for his people, the people of God. And so that's why he wants to know what it means. And so he approaches, we read, one who stood there and asked for an interpretation. And we believe that the one giving the interpretation is an angelic being, most likely the angel Gabriel. Why do we think that? Because in chapter 8, which we'll look at next week, an angelic being named Gabriel interprets the dream for Daniel. So likely it's the same person here. In any case, an unnamed angelic being interprets the dream for Daniel and also elaborates on the dream. So gives Daniel and us understanding on this weird vision, but also adds additional information. So I wonder if you spotted that. When the angel interprets, he adds extra info. So firstly, the angel just kind of recaps and says that these four beasts represent four earthly human kingdoms. That's verse 17. And we're all like, yeah, that's the easy part. We got that one down. And he carries on in verse 18, the angel, and says, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever. Now, just think with me here. If you think back to last week and you think about verse 1 to 14, is this a detail Daniel received in his dream? When he narrates the dream, does he narrate the saints of the Most High God? In other words, the people of God receiving the kingdom. Is that what he saw? Is that what he recounts? Not quite. What we see Daniel narrating in his dream is that the kingdom is given to whom? One like a son of man. Made a big deal about that last week. Verse 14, that the kingdom was given, this one like a son of man ascends in the clouds and the Ancient of Days gives to him, the one like a son of man, that is Jesus Christ, the kingdom. This is new information to us. Here the saints of the Most High are the ones who receive the kingdom. And this is a big elaboration. It is extra information that the angel gives to Daniel that he mentions two more times. So you're meant to notice this. So verse 22 at the end says, and the time came when the saints, that's us believers, possessed the kingdom. Verse 27, and the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. So that's the first little mystery. This angel is supposed to be just explaining things to us, not adding mystery. Am I right? We're going to have words with this angel. We need to figure out this little mystery first. What's going on here? Is it the one like a son of man, Jesus, who receives this eternal kingdom? Or is it the saints of the Most High, the son of man, that receive the kingdom? Well, we will figure that out later. But Daniel moves on because he is particularly concerned with the fourth beast. The first three, not so much. Now he's interested in that fourth beast. Now remember from last week, we saw in the dream all these cues that point, all these literary devices that point our attention to the fourth beast too. It says it was something different about it. And so there's a bit of a mystery about the fourth beast. And Daniel picks up on that. And so he asks for more information. He just straight out goes, I want to know more about that fourth beast, about the 10 horns on its head, and about this other little horn that comes up after the 10 horns, right? And Daniel wants to know more about those. And thankfully, the angel obliges. So that's what we're going to look at. Now, let's have a look at those three details that he asks for. So the fourth beast, Daniel asks, tell me more about that. Now, so remember last week I said to you, the reason perhaps why we have all these cues that are drawing our attention and there's this haze around this fourth beast in particular is because it is at this point in the prophecy that we experience a little bit of whiplash. Do you remember that? It's here in the dream that we encounter a bit of a time warp where the prophecy given to Daniel jumps all of a sudden from events that are now in our past to events that still pertain to our future. So you're just reading along and you're like, all right, and then kapoom, you're this way. And you know, you get a crick in your neck. That is, remember last week we spoke about that. And as strange as this is, I kind of explained to you that this is kind of normal for literature like this. So in other words, around this fourth beast, there is a near fulfillment. There is an event that will fulfill this prediction in the near future. But at the same time, it is also pointing to an event that will take place in the far future. So a near fulfillment, which for us is in our past, but is in Daniel's near future. But at the same time, a far fulfillment, which for us is in our future. And for Daniel, both of these are in his future. In other words, it is speaking about events that will take place both now and just now. That is to use technical South African terminology, right? Both now and just now. That is a kind of, it's at the same time. That's what he's talking about. I don't know if this is helpful to you, men out there. I'm stereotyping, so forgive me for that. But you might be able to use this, hopefully, to your advantage. Should your spouse perhaps say to you on a certain day of the week, like a Saturday, darling, on which day doth it be that thou shalt go to the shed and retrieve the lawnmower and proceed to clean up the yard? Well, let me help you out here. Gentlemen, you may reply, beloved, it is both now and just now. And hey, I mean, what are they going to do with it? Notice, by the way, I did not say now. Okay, because now is something different in South African language. So now, I mean, for those who don't understand South African terminology, Americans and visitors, in South Africa, now isn't like now. It's like, it's the near future. I mean, the events Daniel's talking about is centuries. So, I mean, for us, that's now. So that's just now is like, yo, that's far away. In South African language, now is somewhere between now and just now. You with me? We're not talking about now. This vision is not somewhere between the near future and the far future. It is the same time, the near future and the far future. Are you with me? Or has that made it a little more unusual? You know, speaking of which, like I said to you last week, I think it's just good for us to acknowledge that these kinds of passages just really are uncomfortable, have been uncomfortable for me. But remember what my golf coach told me that is so helpful, what is uncomfortable becomes comfortable with practice. And so I feel like we need to do a little more practice on this to get used to this. Yeah, so you guys want to practice your golf swing this morning? It is a beautiful day outside, so I understand. We're not going to literally practice that, but I really want us to get more comfortable with this kind of literature. So to do that, you keen? Do some practice swinging this morning? Yeah, two people, good. To do that, let's go to a place in the Bible that we should always go to when we are thinking about events still in our future. And I really mean this to you as just really good advice. Understand that when it comes to Daniel, yes, it's about events in the future, but there's all this symbolic, apocalyptic kind of literature. If ever you feel overwhelmed or confused and just like, whoa, I want to check out, my advice to you is go to Jesus' teachings himself on the subject of his second coming, because he talks about it. And that's just that scenery that we're more familiar with. It's just Jesus hanging out with his disciples, teaching them about the time of his second coming. It's Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. And he teaches them about these same events, the events surrounding his second coming, but all three gospel writers record that teaching with some fascinating differences in their account. And that's what I want to have a look at this morning. Now, we're going to come across these passages in weeks to come because they're clearer and more helpful for us. For now, I'm wanting to upload these passages in your mind. I want them to be in your mind because it's so helpful with the backdrop of Daniel, which can be quite strange. So I'm uploading it in your mind, but really what I want to do is practice this idea of seeing both a near and a far fulfillment that is not just in strange Old Testament prophetic texts, but also Jesus. Does that make sense? So let's go. So Luke, if you're casually reading through the Gospel of Luke and you get to Luke 21, you will find that the disciples and Jesus walk out of the temple. They go, wow, it's beautiful. Jesus goes, yes, but it's going to be destroyed. And the disciples go, tell us, when will this happen? And Jesus sits them down. He says, sit down, y'all. Let's talk a little bit. And he says, number one, that There is going to be a time of war, nations rising against nations. That's familiar imagery from Daniel. A time of great persecution is coming, is what Jesus tells them. Then in verse 20, he says, note this, this is interesting for Luke, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that Jerusalem's desolation or destruction has come near. Then he gives them a warning to flee because, man, things are going to get crazy, so get out if you can. And then in verse 25, he says, and there will be signs in the sun and moon and stars and on the earth distress of nations in perplexity because of the roaring of the sea and the waves. Remember these beasts and coming up out of the sea? It's all there. People fainting with fear and with foreboding of what is coming on the world. For the powers of the heavens will be shaken. That's what we were singing about this morning. And then we read this, and then they will see the Son of Man. Remember, that's Jesus' favorite title. He gets it from Daniel 7. They will see the Son of Man not going, but now coming in a cloud with power and great glory. And this is encouraging. Now, when these things begin to take place, straighten up and raise up your heads because your redemption is drawing near. So now, if you're just reading Luke, if you're a new Christian and somebody tells you, you read the Gospels and you're reading Luke and you're going through that, you're like, huh, okay. You will largely be thinking about, if you're reading Luke, that what Jesus is talking about is, yes, his second coming, but mostly what Luke is drawing your attention to is the near fulfillment of these events. When Jerusalem would literally be surrounded by the Roman armies, and the Roman general Pompey will come and he will destroy the temple in Jerusalem in AD 70. That's what sparked the conversation. When will this happen? He says, well, when you see, that happened. Those are near, as in now. I mean, it's decades from when Jesus says, but South African language, that's totally fine with now. Those are the near events. It seems like Luke, you're reading Luke, you're like, okay, I got this. Jesus is talking about AD 70 when the Romans destroy the temple. Awesome. Then you read Matthew. And if you're reading through Matthew, same story. They walk at the temple. This is amazing. Jesus says, don't look at it too long. It's going to be destroyed. The disciples ask, when will this happen? Crucially though, in Matthew, he adds the disciples adding something to their question. So tell us, when will these things be? Same as Luke for now. But, and what will be the sign of your coming, get this, at the end of the age? So Matthew is already setting us up to be thinking not about now, but just now. Got that? Now follow with me here. So then after that, Jesus speaks about wars and persecution like Luke. Then in verse 15, we read this, in Matthew 24. So when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet, none other than Daniel, standing in the holy place, that is the temple, in brackets, let the reader understand, we're trying, Jesus, to understand this, help us, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. So I just want you to first notice, Jesus is directly quoting Daniel. And just get this as well. I mean, that phrase, the abomination of desolation, such a curious phrase. We will have to unpack that. It comes up in chapter 9 and chapter 11 and chapter 12, so we'll get there. But I want you to notice this for now. Jesus unmistakably sees his second coming event in the future as the direct fulfillment of the prophecies of Daniel. Can you see that at least now? He quotes Daniel, when you see an abomination, this is coming up. Jesus sees his second coming as a fulfillment of the prophecies in Daniel. Daniel is alive for us today because Jesus hasn't come yet. Yes, but that's mainly what I wanted to show you. What's missing? Well, in Matthew, there's no talk about the armies surrounding Jerusalem. And there's that intro, which is directing our attention to the end of the age. In other words, if you were not reading Luke, if you decided to pick up Matthew and read Matthew, and you read the same story, your mind would go naturally to the just now, to the far future. So are you with me? Luke seems to be focusing on the near future, AD 70. Matthew seems to be focusing exclusively on the far distant future events that have not happened yet. You got that so far? Now here's what's amazing. Here's what's interesting. What about Mark? What does Mark say? Does he go with now or does he go with just now? What do you think? Both. Yeah, it's amazing. So if you're picking up Mark and you're reading Mark the first time, you're like, what on earth? Is it now or is it just now? It's both. In Mark, you have both the future, far distant event and the near event kind of mapping, overlapping on each other, which is exactly what Daniel 7 is doing. In fact, even to the kind of details. So in Daniel 7, it is the near fulfillment for Daniel, which is now hundreds of years. For Jesus, it's decades, but Daniel's hundreds of years, is the Empire of Rome. It would come and would trample and would destroy. But at the same time in Daniel 7, just like in Mark, speaking about the near and the far distant future events surrounding the second coming of Christ. And what those events relate to in specific is the detail around the 10 horns. So let's now look at, now you've got the beast in mind, near and far. Now let's look at the 10 horns. So in verse 24, we see that the 10 horns, if you're fuzzy with the beast being near and far, well, the 10 horns must be a future reference. It says there, out of this kingdom, 10 kings shall arise. So if you're tempted to think that's still Rome in the past, but we don't know of 10 kind of kings and kingdoms that came out of Rome in the past. Also, bear with me here. This gets a little bit technical, but think through me. These are likely not successive kings. So one Roman king and then the next and then the next and then the next and the next, because detail in the vision is that one comes up later and overthrows three of them. And as far as I can tell, it is not possible to overthrow someone who's already dead. So this is likely pointing to some kind of future event that is some kind of national political structure, a kind of a coalition of sorts out of which will come another being that will initiate this kind of period of great struggle. So bear with me, but this seems to be the natural interpretation here. Did I say natural? Not quite natural, hey. This is still something that we're getting used to. And at this point, when it comes to thinking through, okay, what is that? We're in the future, right? If you've been around church for a while, and if you happen to have been studying the book of Daniel, this is where things get out of hand, where people spend their time endlessly speculating as to what kinds of things in the world could be the sort of national political arrangement of 10 kings and kingdoms out of which comes another one. So back in the day, I remember when the European Union was first formed. I don't remember. I'm not sure if I was alive, actually. But I've heard that when that first happened, that people were like, this is it. This is the 10 horns coming together. The time is happening. Well, that did not turn out to be true. And there's many more nations that are part of the European Union. All of that to say, just a word of caution for us as we progress, where we come across this picture. There are details here. It is giving us some information about events in the future that will have great bearing for the believers of God. But a word of caution, avoid endless speculations, particularly around who and when. I mean, Jesus warned us, nobody knows, not even he knows. And yet people have gotten into all sorts of trouble trying to predict, is it now, and calculate exactly. Avoid endless speculation about when or who. Is it Donald Trump? I mean, I saw that going on. Like, is it? The problem is that we can bury ourselves under this kind of thing and obsess about in these speculations and miss the main issue. And the main issue here, what we're being taught, is that in the future, the kingdoms of this world will cease. They will come to an end. They will be replaced by the earthly kingdom of Jesus Christ And all who believe in him and are part of his kingdom will at that point reign with him in this eternal kingdom. That is the main point. And I just worry about these speculations and missing the main point. So hold on to that, because that is so helpful for us today. At least it's helpful for me to think about the fact that no matter how crazy things on this earth get, and is it just me or are things getting crazy? But no matter how crazy things on this earth gets, know this for sure, that for the believer, it gets unbelievably good in the end. So for the believer, I'm sure you've heard this phrase before, but you know, and this thing before, but for the believer, everything will be okay in the end. Is that true? Yes. In fact, I mean, it's more than that. Things will not just be okay. Things will be incredible for the believer at the end. So everything will be okay in the end. So if it's not okay, it's not the end. Is that true for the believer? Yes. Yes, it is. It is absolutely true. That is what we are learning here. And we are being taught, we are being warned, we are being forewarned that things are only going to get more and more difficult. But never fear, because they bring in this ultimate end, which is amazing. So that's the 10 horns. That's what we meant to take away from that. Then the little matter of the little horn. Well, let me just say this to you. This little fellow is going to get a lot of attention in the coming weeks. We can't avoid it. He's all over chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 11, chapter 12 as well. So we're going to do lots of talking about it. But let me tell you for now, if you're wondering what this little horn in Daniel 7 refers to, is what we Christians would commonly talk about today as the Antichrist. If that's a new term for you, well, it's actually a term that we only come across in the Bible, in the letters of the Apostle John, but it's become a popular way today for Christians to refer to this little horn fellow. And basically, in Daniel, it is simply referring to a person in the future, at the time when these national events take place, a person who will have considerable power, but one who is diabolically opposed to the people of God and will aggressively persecute them. So that's what we're being told right now. And we'll see next week, get this, there's a near fulfillment in a Greek ruler who would come up and do exactly that. But at the same time, because it's someone Jesus still refers to as well, that there is a far fulfillment of it as well. But ultimately, it's someone who will, as verse 25 says, someone who will wear out the saints of the Most High, which is a little bit of a euphemism. I mean, when I say wear out, I'm like, man, my kids wore me out today. That is not what we are referring to here. I mean, verse 21, he will make war and prevail. It's a time of aggressive persecution coming for the people of God. Does it sound tough to you? I mean, it sounds hard what we're speaking about here. It is. It is speaking for sure about difficult events that are to come. But you have to see this. But know this. This period of intense suffering and persecution brought about by this fellow, his time is limited. So, end of verse 25, he will have this kind of authority and be allowed to do this for a time, times, and half a time. Now, for all of those who know, if you know, you know. So at this point, I'm not going to get into today what is amazingly wonderful, beautiful Bible maths. That's right, y'all. If you came today going, this is it, I brought my calculator, I am ready, I have my Bible in one hand and my calculator, let's do this. I am sorry to disappoint you or one of you. But we will be doing more of this as we go. We will be looking in the future at what these time references refer to. But for now, enough is to just get our heads around this dual fulfillment thing. But the main point is, yes, a time of great hardship is coming for God's people. But this time is of specific, limited duration, governed by the Ancient of Days himself, who is never not on his throne. That's what you need to know. And if that is not yet encouragement enough for you, just keep reading. You've got to keep reading in these passages. So verse 26 and 27, but the court shall sit in judgment, and his dominion, the little horn's dominion, will be taken away. God is in control of this whole process, even though it doesn't look like it. He is. To be consumed and destroyed to the end. That one day he'll be done with completely, and all evil will be done with. And the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to who? To the people of the saints of the Most High. So as we end today, I would really love to just lodge within your mind, hopefully, two clear points. What the full extent of Daniel 7 is telling us is that, positively, we have an amazing calling, but at the same time, there is a great cost that awaits us. That's largely what the Daniel 7 is about. So firstly, the cost. What I mean by the cost is this is speaking about a time of great difficulty for believers. Now, I know this is hard news for people because a lot of people sitting right here today are already going through difficult times. I mean, I get that. And difficult times due to personal circumstances, perhaps due to own mistakes or due to the evil in people around us and circumstances and difficulty, like already things are hard. And I get that. And at the same time, what I'm really speaking about, what this text is really speaking about beyond those difficult events is the fact that it's getting harder and harder to be a Christian. Am I right? It is getting harder and harder to be a faithful Christian. Christianity is no longer a popular option. I don't know if it ever, I think it was actually, it was a popular option for a long time. It is no longer the popular option. It is for sure not a comfortable option. If you are here today and just looking to add a measure of spirituality to your ordinary life that'll bring great benefit to you as you carry on with your ordinary life and just expect for things to get better, this is not your best option. That is what we are being told here. Things are becoming harder and harder to be a Christian, and the reality is it's only going to get harder. And I don't know. For me, that has a measure of encouragement to it. It's strange. Maybe I'm weird. And we are all motivated in different ways. But for me, there's this great help in just acknowledging. You know, the worst thing is to be tricked and go, I thought this was going to be. And, you know, to just know that yeah, this is what's set before us. And I mean, I want to say this, that if you're here and we're here because you're a Christian, or at least like looking into it, and we're wrestling with these things, man, this is why the Bible tells us, like Hebrews 10:25, that to not forsake meeting together and encouraging one another, and it goes on to say, especially as the day draws near. This that we do, this singing and this meeting, is this encouragement going to become more and more necessary? You here, you are brave and courageous to come and to overtly identify yourself as a Christian in not being anywhere else to be today, but to come to here, and I commend you, and we commend each other, and we encourage each other for that. So do that, but know that there's a great cost, an increasingly high cost to being a Christian. But the good news is there is also a great reward. And the reward is a high calling. A high calling. This takes us back to the angel's elaboration. The three times the angel spoke about the saints of the Most High God who faithfully persevere to the end are the ones who receive dominion and some measure of authority in this eternal kingdom. The call is a call to reign, to rule with Jesus over this world. Now, I don't know, how does that strike you? A lot of Christians, for some reason, we've avoided this kind of language because it sounds kind of weird. It should not. It is what we were told about our design as human beings on the first page of the Bible, literally, Genesis 1. When God made us, we read, then God said, at the end of verse 28, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them, mankind, have dominion. This is our design. This is our destiny. What happened? Right? That was compromised, completely compromised. Man has forsaken the great calling by rebelling against God back in the garden. That was the design. It got messed up, but Jesus, the Son of Man, through his saving work on the cross and his exaltation to the right hand and the distribution of the Holy Spirit to believers around the world today is an invitation, even now in some measure, to participate in his reign now. And as good as that can be today, though, let me tell you that that is still nothing as good as it can be today. It is nothing compared to what it will be like on that day when the saints of the Most High receive the kingdom with the Son of Man, worshiping the Son of Man, and the beast is done with, and evil is done with. Man, that day. I want to end with, I don't know, I have an overactive imagination, but this really works for me. And again, honestly, different motivations for different people, but maybe this will resonate with you as well, because this is so... I think about this picture of this return to Eden, the way it was supposed to be. Earth, it's life as we know it today. Just think about this. Just imagine. Life as we know it today, the good parts. Everything good, everything beautiful, everything that brings joy, all of those moments that warm your heart, that future reign we're talking about is all of those things, and get this, only those things, because there's none of the evil. So none of what breaks your heart, none of what causes you anxiety, none of what stresses you, that's all gone. And it's everything we know of life today that's beautiful and glorious, minus anything that's bad. That's the picture being painted for us. It's not a picture of wafting about on clouds with wings, playing a harp, or, you know, like, that doesn't motivate me at all. I don't know, maybe you, but that's not what we're being told here. That's the great calling, but it comes at great cost. And for now, for us now, these two are intermingled. We get both. We get tribulation, which is going to increase. We get some measure of glory, which is only going to increase. So persevere, saints, and encourage one another with these words. Let's pray. Lord, would you encourage us with these words? I sincerely pray this morning. When we think about the world around us, the events in the news, just our very own lives, all the chaos, difficulty. Why would we sign up for this to be your followers when we have this, that things will just get harder? So encourage us today with these words. By your Holy Spirit, which is active now, bringing about your heavenly kingdom onto earth now, Holy Spirit, encourage our hearts. Discharge to us the confidence, the conviction, the certainty that these events will play out at some point, in exactly the way you said, because all of the other ones that you said happened did. Would that be so deeply rooted in our hearts? In that confidence, grant us peace. Grant to us peace. Peace that comes not from a life that is absent of any struggle, because we know that is not what's before us. So grant to us that peace that surpasses understanding, that only you can discharge to us. Encourage us, embolden us, strengthen us in increasing measure as we try and set ourselves to living our lives faithfully to you in these days. May your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.